This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 40. This is our end of season award show that we affectionately call The Attackies.
The Attackies.
Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century. That's 20th. We post our next movie selections there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. So what have we been watching lately?
Oh, wow. Well, it's been a while since we recorded, so probably a lot of things sprinkled in there. But most recently, we did watch something new. I think it's fairly new, right?
Yeah, 2022, The House.
The House.
It is a British animation stop-motion anthology film written by Inda Walsh. It's an anthology. There's three different short stories, and your memory is better than mine. So the first one is called And Heard Within, A Lie Is Spun.
Oh, well, that's a complicated title.
It's complicated.
Yeah, so the first episode is basically, it kind of looks like we're set in maybe, I don't know, I would have said Victorian England, but then maybe not.
It definitely has a Victorian vibe.
Yeah, so there's a family that is clearly, like, they're not down on their luck necessarily, mm-hmm. but they're not as posh as the rest of their family, and they're kind of looked down upon.
Right.
And this guy comes out of the woods and offers them this, to build them a mansion. And he's a quote-unquote artist, is what we're told. And so, but they have to promise to leave their little cottage and move and stay in this big mansion.
Mm-hmm.
And the mansion, once they're in it, like the parents, so there's a mother and a father and then a daughter and a baby daughter.
Yeah.
The daughter's, I don't know, adolescent age.
Uh-huh.
The house keeps changing and the daughters basically get lost in the house, but the parents, something's happening to the parents. Like they're becoming part of the house. They're kind of obsessed. I think that's a point that's trying to be made, maybe, is they're kind of so obsessed with moving up in life that they become part of the furniture of the house.
Right.
And the artist keeps messing with the house and changing things. So you're constantly getting lost or things are torn apart or not where they used to be.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I mean, it's very much a mind game.
Yeah. And there's definitely some startling elements. Like there's these workers that are in the house and the kids walk in, and anytime they walk in on the workers just stop and stare at the kids. And
yeah, it's creepy.
It's like a real creepy lifelessness to the workers.
Yeah, you know what? It reminded me of The Shining.
Yeah.
Like those like surprise elements of like you're seeing something that you know you shouldn't be seeing and everything stops, you know, like what's happening here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very unsettling.
Yeah.
But, oh, wow, the look is incredible.
The stop motion is fantastic. Yeah. I mean, it's really good. And we're fans of that anyhow, but wow, this was artistically, this is pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely not a pick-me-up story.
No, it's not.
The second one is called Then Lost is Truth That Can't Be Won.
Wow. They put a lot of thought into these titles. So the second one, so the first one we should have said, the main characters are humans. We're dealing with, I mean, they're stop motion animated characters and they're made out of felt or something. But then the second one, the main character is a rat.
Yeah.
He's some sort of rodent. Like he's a rodent and it's the same house that was in the first story.
Right.
But now it's in more of a modern setting, I'd say downtown London or something. And he's renovating this and he's going to sell it for a big
profit.
Chunk of change. And it seems like he's like throwing his whole life at this thing, all of his money, his banker or somebody keeps calling him. Like he's struggling to make this happen and he's putting all the nice finishes on everything.
Yeah.
But then there's like a roach problem. Are they roaches? In my mind, they look like roaches, but there's definitely insects. Keep like everything looks super clean and nice in the kitchen. He opens one cabinet and there's like hundreds of bugs.
Yeah.
It was like Joe's apartment. If you're our age, you know Joe's apartment.
He's working up towards this showing of the house.
Yeah,
too.
There's a big open house coming.
So he's trying to make it look as nice as possible and these darn bugs keep just showing up.
And then some pesky visitors on the open house show up and they won't leave.
Like, yeah, that
not
was
roaches.
Very odd.
It was very strange. And I had a little run-in with a real-life rodent yesterday in our house. So I was having like flashbacks of this. I happen to be folding laundry and look over and there's a baby flying squirrel peeking out at me from underneath the buffet that sits under our TV.
Yeah. Courtesy of our cats.
Our cats are forever. Thankfully, this one was not maimed or injured. He just needed help getting out of my house.
Yes. Good job rescuing there.
Thank you. Nyla helped me on that one, but yes.
And then the third story is called Listen Again and Seek the Sun.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so this one, the main characters are cats. Again, stop motion.
Yeah.
Cats wearing clothing. It's the same house, but now a young lady is like renovating the house, but she has renters, and I'm doing air quotes that no one can see, living in the house. It seems like they never pay the rent though. Like one mm-hmm. of them is a cat that catches fish for her instead of paying rent. And then the other one is like this hippy dippy cat that like does yoga and burns incense and, you know, wants to give her crystals as rent payment instead of actual pay. But it's weird because the whole time they're like, the other renters are trying to convince her, like, you need to leave. You've got to leave. You've got to leave. And you don't find out till the end, like, water is creeping in. Like, they're...
Yeah. Some sort of flood is, like, taking over the earth.
Yeah. And she really does need to, like, be gone from this place. But she's convinced, no, I have to fix this up. This is my one dream. I love this house. I can't... She cannot be parted from this house.
And this house is the same house from the first
same
two stories.
House. Yeah.
That's the really the only common thread
yeah,
between
that's the only thread
stories.
Between the stories. Exactly. Interesting. I will say we watched the previews for this several times before we actually watched it. And the previews are much creepier than the actual shows. Because I thought, oh gosh, we can't watch this with the kids. But it really was fine.
Yeah. It was also rated TVMA, I think.
Yeah, I think it is rated TVMA. And I don't understand
why. There's really
why.
Nothing objectionable other than, like, it's pretty frightening, I think, if you watched with a
it's
kid.
It's got
two
a lot
child.
Of creep factor to
child
it.
Child too young.
Yeah, child too young. Two child? A two child. Don't watch it with a two child. But yes, there's creep factor, but... And I did compare the first episode to The Shining, which you would not watch with a child. But it's not that bad. It's just that's just what it kind of reminded me of.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was interesting. The artistry, the stop motion effects were phenomenal.
Yeah.
The storytelling, I was a little lost.
Yeah, I think I would have preferred there to be some more common thread besides just the house.
Yeah.
Because I will say, we won't spoil it, but each ending ends like unfinished. It seems like there's a...
So you think there's going to be some resolution in the next story.
Yeah.
And there never is.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I would love for somebody else to watch this. And if you think there is a point that I'm missing, please explain it to me.
Right.
Like, what did I miss? Because like I was waiting for like something.
Yeah, like the first story was clearly, you know, addressing materialism.
Right.
And the quest to move
I could
up,
see that.
You know, above your station or whatever. But the second one, I felt really bad for that rat because he's just trying to make a living. You know, yeah. He's putting all of his money and hard work into this house.
Yeah.
And he just wants to, he's not trying to get rich. He's just trying to make a living.
Yeah. It seems like this is, he's flipping houses. That's his job or
so
this
not sure,
house.
I'm not sure why, you know, he needed a comeuppance. And then the third one, that one didn't really end as a bummer, I guess.
No, that one actually was the only one that ended, on a happier note, but still it was odd. I'm not sure what they were trying to say.
So, yeah, I would say there was some things about it that I wish they would have done differently. You know, more of a tie-in from story to story to story. But overall, the artistry was really incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is one of those, again, you know, the real, it just looks like real objects in stop motion. Like, this is probably going to look just as good 10 years from now as it does now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that's on Netflix. Be sure to check it out. So, talk to us about the Attackies. What are the Attackies?
The Attackies. Okay, so basically, think Oscars, right? Think Golden Globes. Think Met Gala. No, not really. But this is just as prestigious and awe-inspiring for sure.
Oh, yes.
No, basically, we go through all the movies that we've covered just in this season, in season two, and we give out fictitious awards to the actors, the actresses, the setting, special effects, you know, just as if we were the whoever the people are that give out the Oscars. The Academy, I don't know.
Yeah.
We're our own Academy, and we are here to give out awards that mean nothing.
Yeah, that's right. And we picked categories that maybe are not always standard. So we have some that are standard and some that sure. are just like, we felt like giving an award for this, so we did it.
Yeah, it's an award we thought the Oscars are missing.
What did we watch in season two? So what was our pool here? Let me read you this list very quickly.
Please do.
So we did Blackbeard's Ghost, mm-hmm. Bedknobs and Broomsticks. That was a double episode. Black Sabbath from 1963. High Spirits. Swamp Thing. The Thing. Poltergeist. The Beastmaster. Diary of a Madman from 1963. Tales from the Dark Side. The Birds. Cue the Winged Serpent. The Fifth Element. Invasion of the Body Snatchers from 1978. I Know What You Did Last Summer. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Tremors. The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism. And finally, The Mummy from 1959.
Wow.
So that was quite a bit. This
covered a lot of territory.
We did. Okay, our first category, most rewatchable film. And just a reminder, in last year's Attackies, the winner was Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay.
So this year's options, we have The Fifth Element, Tremors, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, The Beastmaster, and The Thing. So why don't we run through these? So The Fifth Element, we both saw in the 90s when it was released.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And probably have seen it umpteen times, right?
Yeah, yeah. Seen it a lot.
Always fun. Tremors. Again, this is one, I think it was on TNT or TBS. It was one of those where it was played a lot.
Yeah, this was one of those slumber party movies for,
oh yeah,
you know, when I was coming up, if you're going to watch a scary movie, Tremors was on the, and I didn't watch a ton of like real scary movies. Tremors was okay for me. Like I could, I could watch Tremors and live with myself.
Right, so, right. You could sleep well.
I saw a lot of Tremors.
And the same for Buffy the Vampire Slayer, right? Because I had never seen that until this season, but you grew up on that one.
Yeah, my sister and I would watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer together.
And The Beastmaster is definitely another one. I think it was on TBS or TNT. It was one that was like played a lot.
Yep, grew up watching that one with my dad.
Yeah, I have many Saturday afternoon memories of The Beastmaster.
Oh, yeah.
And then The Thing, you know, I've said this multiple times. To me, it's the greatest monster movie of all time.
Yes, you have deep, deep feelings for The Thing.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And I didn't see that one until I was an adult. That was too scary for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, one that's not on this list, but like as far as what I've seen so many times, I think Swamp Thing, I told you I've seen that so many times.
Mm-hmm.
It probably could have made this list very easily. But we really narrowed it down to The Thing and Tremors.
Mm-hmm.
And where we landed was, drumroll.
That was terrible.
That was a very terrible drumroll. Tremors.
Tremors, yay. Congratulations.
I think that one's an easy one because it's such a feel-good monster movie. It's kind of like it checks all the boxes.
And there's good resolution at the end.
It's a good resolution. I think there's it's kind of fun and upbeat. It's silly, but it's not like too stupid, you know?
Yeah. It's not too stupid and it's not too scary.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so our second category is most appealing movie universe. So that might need a little bit of explaining. So basically, it's if we had to choose one of these universes to live in, not that we're going to be one of the main characters or anything like that,
right?
But just we're going to exist in the same universe as this movie, which one would we choose?
Right.
So
right.
The nominees are Blackbeard's Ghost, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Tremors, The Birds, or The Fifth Element.
All right. All right.
Yeah. So I think
just a reminder, last year we did this. Greentown, Illinois was the setting of Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Oh, yeah. Such a pretty little New England town.
So yeah, just run us through each of these here.
Well, I'm going to start with The Fifth Element because that's probably my least favorite pick on this. I think you probably put that one in the nominees. I don't love a high-tech, high-flying, you know, far-in-the-future kind of world. That's not where I want to live. I'm like a dirt beneath my feet, you know, water, sand between my toes kind of person. So I do not want to live in a place where everything's like buzzing around, floating in the metropolis of the sky.
It's so, definitely if you're a fan of big city life and conveniences, you know, if you want a meal, you just dial it up and poof, it's there, that kind of thing. But yeah, I'm with you. I understand that for sure.
I'm an earthy girl, so that one doesn't really sing to me. We've talked about the birds in our episode. That is an actual, that was filmed in a little coastal town, I think in California.
Yep, that's right.
And I don't remember the name of it off the top of my head now, but I remember when we looked it up, it was beautiful, picturesque. Even to this day, I think they've kept a lot of that small town coastal feel.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm a Florida girl, so a little coastal town. I could get behind that, even if they have crazy birds. I feel like eventually, I mean, you know, we live with hurricanes in Florida. If you have like a crazy flock of birds every, you know, once a season or something, you stay inside, right?
Yeah. If you survive the bird pandemic, I think that's a pretty great place to live.
Yeah, exactly. Tremors. Okay, now most people are probably thinking, why? Why would you want to live in Tremors? Perfection is the name of the town?
Yeah, Perfection with... I don't know, 12 people or something crazy.
Yeah, it's like a two-digit population cap, right? So that speaks to me because of the isolation of it. Like, I have lived in the desert before for a brief period of time. So I do kind of love the desert, but I love alone time.
Uh-huh. So you'd get a lot of it here.
I would get a lot of it there, but I also like to have the option to, like, hit a local coffee shop.
Yeah.
And Perfection is... not going to offer. And I have to hang out in Mr. What's his name? The guy that owns the store?
Mr. Miyagi. I don't know what he's called.
It's not Mr. Miyagi. It's not even the same actor.
Oh, yeah.
It's not Paparita. Egg Chin.
Egg Chin from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, he's the same guy in Big Trouble in Little China. If he's my only, I don't know what kind of cup of coffee he's brewing. And he's like
probably
the only.
Probably Folgers.
Yeah. He's the only guy to hang out with in town. I don't know. Yeah. Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Does check a few boxes for me, though. It's an English town, countryside town. There's an old manor house that Angela Lansbury's character is living in. I mean, this is what dreams are made of.
Looks pretty cool.
Except it's during World War II.
Yeah, you might have to deal with the Nazi invasion.
Right, which they did handily get rid of the Nazis in their little town. But, I mean, you know, that war went on for some time. I don't know what else they had to deal with. I don't know if I want to live through World War II.
It was pretty bad, though. I mean, the whole reason the kids were there is, like, because of the war.
Just like the C.S. Lewis, you know, Narnia stuff. The kids got shipped off to the country because of World War II. So
there is that.
There's that. So that leaves us with Blackbeard's ghost.
Yeah, the tiny town of Godolphin.
The tiny town of Godolphin, which looks like just a homey, cute, northeastern coastal town. Very similar to what we voted for last year.
Right.
And their biggest issue is they've got some hustlers that have come in from the big city, right? They're trying to make a little gambling mecca that's protected from big city watchdogs, I think, is probably. But they handily deal with them and get them out of there. So... I think I'm going to live in Godolphin. That's my most appealing movie universe. The award goes to.
We didn't have any kind of build up there.
Oh, sorry.
Like, you just said the winner. That's it.
Well, my bad. This is why I'm not on a real award show. No one's ever asked me to present an Oscar. So there you go.
Very good. Congratulations, Disney, for most appealing movie universe.
Creating such a cute little town.
Our next category is best special effects.
Mm-hmm.
So the caveat here is it's the best special effects for the time period, right?
Right, right.
So it's a little weird.
Movie was made.
Yeah, it's a little weird to have a movie from like 1999 going against a movie from 1930, for instance.
Special effects will differ.
So let's go through it. First on the list, The Thing, special effects by Rob Bottin. And this, of course, is a movie famous for the kind of the gory, practical special effects.
Mm-hmm.
And what was cool, and we've talked about this, I think, during the episode, As John Carpenter said, there's a rule to filmmaking that if you're making a monster movie, always keep your monster in the dark.
Right.
Because if you bring him out in the light, it's like, it looks cheap, it looks silly. You.
Yeah.
Kind of exposes it as for what it is. And that's, you know, make believe. But he says, you know what? I don't want to do that. I want a monster we can show in the light and really still be scary.
Yeah.
Poltergeist is our second selection. It actually was nominated for an Academy Award in 1982, the same year as The Thing.
Oh.
And it lost to E.T.
Oh, you're always going to lose to E.T. Yeah. Everybody lost to E.T. that year.
I think E.T., you know, that was just, it was its year, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, so Richard Edlund and Industrial Lights and Magic were responsible for those special effects. Our third option was The Birds.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I don't know how you say this, but Ube Ewerks.
What a name.
Yeah. It was nominated for an Academy Award, but then lost to Cleopatra from the same year. Oh,
would that have been Elizabeth Taylor's?
Elizabeth, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Elizabeth Taylor's. Richard Burton.
Yeah.
So again, they had all sorts of scenes that even to this day, like, I don't know how they did it, you know?
It's so convincing. I mean, we have birds. Yeah. We own birds, chickens, but they're birds.
Right.
And those birds in the movie are legit pecking people.
Yeah,
like,
they are.
That's what birds look like when they peck your skin.
So remember when she's on the boat and a bird comes out of nowhere and like flies in her hair and pecks her on the head and she starts bleeding? It's like, how do they do that?
Yeah, I don't know.
You know, the fourth one is Tremors. This is from Amalgamated Dynamics. There were a team of 34 people working on this, mostly for the puppetry of our, you know, our sandworm.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only real effect here that you can call out, right? The it's pretty complicated sandworm, and when it opens its mouth, its tongue is like composed of little mini monster-looking things.
I still think it's the inspiration for the upside-down monster from Stranger Things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I could see that. And then Bedknobs and Broomsticks. So this is one that actually won the Academy Award for that year. It looks like Alan Malley, Eustace Lysett, and Danny Lee were all responsible
for those.
So
they won for special effects that year?
Yes, they won. And this is one of the first movies where they integrated like cartoon effects with real life effects.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on these?
I mean, they all really stand out as like you can watch them now and not be like, wow, that's dumb.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the effects. So, I mean, they were, yeah. They
so
all
like
deserve to be
here. So, Tremors, for instance, Tremors used practical effects, and we keep talking about that. You and I tried to watch some of the subsequent movies.
Yes.
In the series.
The sequels.
And at some point, they switched to a CGI worm.
Oh, it's bad.
And it just looks awful.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But I think, again, the practical effects, like, they hold up. They put a lot of time and effort into that. So
I think
and,
you know,
besides
the animation in Bedknobs and Broomsticks, they also had the, like, the suit of armor. That was her whole deal. She was trying to find that locomotive.
Substitutionary locomotion.
There you go. Yeah. Wow, I cannot believe you just pulled that out of your hat. But yeah, she was looking for the spell that would make these suits of armor stand up and walk so they could fight the Nazis, right? And it really looks like a suit of armor walking around. It's not CGI, because I doubt they had CGI.
Yeah.
Then, you know.
It looked very convincing.
Yeah, it was impressive. It's still impressive.
Still impressive. And then Poltergeist, you know, all the effects with kind of the ghostly features coming out of the TV and things like that.
Right.
Remember all those things floating around in the bedroom?
That creepy clown doll.
Yeah. Yeah. With the tree coming to life.
Oh,
know, going and trying to get the kid. So definitely cool. But where we landed.
Okay. Drum roll. Sorry.
I think you got to do the drum roll a little longer. Make it more effective. So.
No. Makes my nose itch.
We're giving this one to The Thing. All right, our next category is Best Music Soundtrack or Score. And so this is a different one for us because traditionally, you know, you'll have like a best movie soundtrack.
Right.
There'll be songs. Then there'll be a different one for a score where somebody's actually composed music for the movie.
Oh, okay.
You know, we don't have that many movies that we've reviewed, so we kind of combine them all into one, right?
Okay.
Best music, soundtrack, or score. So, again, we have The Thing, Ennio Morricone. doing his best John Carpenter impression in this movie. The other one, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Danny Zeitlin. We talked about this a little bit during the episode. But, you know, he was like a jazz musician, and it was kind of out of nowhere that he was asked.
Huh.
And he's like, I'm probably not going to get another chance to do a movie score.
Right.
So I better do this one. And it's definitely kind of offbeat, a little funky, a little goofy. Sometimes it was off-putting, but unsettling.
Right.
But it worked for that film.
It did. It did. And it was consistent all the way through.
Right. The Beastmaster, we have Lee Holdridge, responsible for the music there. And it's kind of a traditional, like orchestral plus horns, you know, the kind of a big band. Not a big band, but you know what I'm saying? Like a,
yeah,
a,
an orchestra.
A big production.
Right.
Definitely the main theme was memorable, but, you know, a good kind of traditional score.
Well, you know, we've talked about that before. That's very timeless. If you want to keep your movie timeless, you go with the orchestral theme.
Yeah, agreed. Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Irvin Kostel. And this definitely was more of a musical.
Yeah,
this film, the music was more important probably for this movie than other films, right?
Sure, it's part of the plot and the setting and the whole shebang, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's like a Mary Poppins or something. You've got those songs. And of these movies, because I am not a musician like you are, so I just don't hold on to soundtracks and scores in my mind like you do. With the exception of a handful of movies, which, you know, we can get into another day. But, of course, this one is stuck in my brain because Portobello Road. Like, I know that song, you know, from my childhood of watching this movie.
Oh, yeah.
A lot.
Yeah. It's so memorable. It still pops up.
Yeah,
in your head.
Exactly.
And then lastly, Tremors, Ernest Troost, which is kind of an odd selection. I think the number of movies that have a country music score is very low, right? Like
pure country.
unless it's like just a cowboy
eight
movie.
8 seconds. Yeah, exactly.
This one really kind of came down again, I think, to really, Beastmaster, the traditional score, The Thing, because it is such a sense of dread that the music creates. And then, of course, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. And we landed on Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
All right, so I'll take this next category. We are dealing with the most becoming actor. So is this basically hotness score? Is that
I think it's doing? A hottie, yeah, hottie score.
Okay. So the list of nominees are Kurt Russell from The Thing, Rod Taylor from The Birds, Luke Perry in Buffy, Kevin Bacon in Tremors, and Steve Guttenberg from High Spirits. Which of these does not really fit the category? We love you, Steve Guttenberg, if you're listening. We love you, but a hottie is not really what I would consider you. In all fairness, what?
You didn't have the best options, I don't think.
No, really. I mean, Donald Sutherland, am I going to put him down as...
Right.
No, I'm not.
Yeah, Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, obviously, Kevin Bacon's Kevin Bacon, and this was kind of at the height of his powers, I think.
Yeah.
You know, like that's just a whole game, right? 6 degrees of separation of Kevin Bacon or whatever it is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, he looks good. He's doing a good job acting. He's really into that role. I think he plays that role well.
Mm-hmm.
Luke Perry's Luke Perry. Again, this is kind of at the height of his powers, too. Like, he's...
Right.
Is he fresh off of 90210 or about to go into 90210?
No, they were working around his 90210 schedule.
Oh, that's right. So he's already in. So he is the hottie of the moment when he's filming Buffy.
Oh, yeah.
His character is fun in Buffy, but he's a little one note, you know, and you don't get a ton of him.
Right.
Rod Taylor from The Birds. I like him. He's a little bit surly. Very aloof. Very good looking man.
Yeah.
You know, but I think you know where we're going here. Drum roll, please. The winner of the most becoming actor is Kurt Russell in The Thing. Because Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
I rest my case.
Just so everybody knows, last year the winner was Kurt Russell from Big Trouble in Little China.
And I believe I was also picking the winners last
year. Yes.
I do love Kurt Russell. I even love Kurt Russell as old man playing Santa Claus. I love Kurt Russell. He's great. He's great.
We saw him in an Elvis Presley movie, and I think it was called maybe The World's Fair, but it was around The World's Fair.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this little tiny kid that comes up.
That's right.
And for some reason, he kicks Elvis Presley in the shin.
I think Elvis Presley asked him to kick him in the shin. Oh, that's what it was. Trying to get out of something.
No, he wanted to see the nurse.
Oh, that's
right.
World's
Fair.
That's right.
So he said, kick me as hard as you can. And then this kid is a little Kurt Russell.
He's a little baby Kurt Russell.
And he's unmistakably Kurt Russell.
You could not miss him. Just a tiny version of Kurt Russell.
Yeah. But that's not the version we're talking about here.
No. This is fully adult Kurt Russell.
Big beard, kind of long hair, strapping guy.
As we know, I have if you've ever seen Jeff Hanshaw, I don't have a problem with beards and longish hair. So he does fit my profile.
Awesome. Well, congratulations, Kurt.
Good job, Kurt Russell.
All right. So now we come to most enthralling actress. Again, this is kind of on the hottie scale. And it's not just pure looks either. I would look at it as like, you know, what you're drawn to.
Sure.
You know, like personality has to be a big part of this, right?
Yes, obviously. That's what I was going for.
And yeah. And last year, just so you know, Terry Garr won from her role as Inga in Young Frankenstein.
Oh, yes, yes.
But yeah, so we have Christy Swanson playing Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Yeah, very physically fit, you know, really, really pretty girl, right?
Yes, very attractive.
Mila Jovovich, you know, she's a supermodel, right?
I was about to say, supermodel, hello.
Fifth Element, I'm a teenager, I'm seeing this. She's like, I don't know, her outfit's like bandages, basically.
I was about to say, she's wearing a Band-Aid for a top, so yeah, there you go.
Tanya Roberts from The Beastmaster, she's like, really, you know.
Very attractive, yeah.
Very attractive. Eyes are like otherworldly beautiful, right?
They are. Did she end up being a Bond girl?
She was a Bond girl.
That's right. Yeah. So, okay. Hello. If you can get a job as a Bond girl, you've got something going for you in the looks department.
Jo Beth Williams from Poltergeist.
Yeah.
She definitely kind of has the housewife / mom.
Girl next door, but yeah, the mom version.
Yeah.
Very all-American looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Fit, wholesome.
A lot of fun. I think, you know, her scenes with her husband in particular, I thought was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you did like that, yeah.
And then, so I don't know if this is cheating or not, but I have two girls from the movie Black Sabbath. So we have Michelle Mercier that plays Rosie from The Conversation. She's the one that's getting the creepy phone calls.
Oh, yeah. She was very beautiful. Probably, well, I guess by her name, she's French.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Susie Anderson is in The Vertilac, so she plays Sadinka. And she's just this beautiful blonde.
Right.
Both of those girls, like we talked about, their eyelashes and their eye makeup is like stellar.
Classic 60s. Yeah. Yeah. It's like spot on 60s supermodel. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, when I look at this list, I think the girls from Black Sabbath are probably more than I can handle. They're like, it's too much glamour, right? Yeah, same thing with Mila. Like, she's a supermodel. She's gorgeous and all. But yeah, probably more than I can handle. Christy Swanson, she's like a teenager in this movie. So beautiful teenager. I think she's our age, though.
I was going to say, I think she was in her 20s when she filmed that, though, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
She was playing a teenager, but she was not a teenager.
Right, right. So she's definitely beautiful. So for me, it really came down to Tanya Roberts, who I think every boy that watched The Beastmaster back in the day all had a crush on Tanya Roberts.
Oh, heck yeah.
And then Jo Beth Williams, it's like you got somebody that loves her kids, loves her husband, but like has fun too.
Right. Right? She's like, a cool mom.
She's a cool mom.
But not in a weird, what's that, Mean Girls, like, I'm different. I'm a cool mom. Yeah, not that kind of cool mom.
Right. But really, that aspect, I think, is what led me to selecting Jo Beth Williams from Poltergeist.
All right. So something we always talk about is, can this movie play like during your Halloween party?
Right.
So we had to create a category for that. So best Halloween party film, which means like people can be in your house. I don't know. What do you do? Bobbing for apples, handing out candy at the door. Whatever you do at a Halloween party.
Whatever you do at your parties.
And And this could be playing in the background, and it adds to the ambiance, right? Uh-huh. It's not too creepy. You don't have to be glued to it to kind of know what's going on, but it's a good Halloween feel.
Yeah, it's not like torture porn or something where you're just having somebody getting mutilated.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking a family Halloween party. Could be playing. Or another test of this was, could it play at...
The Chop Shop.
Yeah, thank you. I was like, what happened to the name of that place? The Chop Shop, which is one of our favorite restaurants downtown. So, because they like to play some old B-movies in the background.
And last year, the winner was Horror of Dracula, the Hammer film.
Well, of course. You got to play Horror of Dracula during a Halloween party. All right, so this year, the nominees are The Mummy, Black Sabbath, The Birds, High Spirits, and Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism, which... I just want to play that one so that people can ask me, what movie is this? And I can be like, oh, it's The Torture Chamber.
You don't know? Everybody knows The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism.
How could you not know this movie? So I will say, I mean, even though it has a silly name, Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism and The Mummy, Black Sabbath, they all have that Hammer horror feel, you know, classic horror movie, classic monster movie.
And that gothic.
Very gothic, yeah.
1960s feel.
Exactly. So, of course, they would fit in very well with just like playing in the background of your Halloween party. High Spirits is a different take on a Halloween party. That's more of like a hijinks, fun, good time. But it's not really the ambiance, I think, that we're looking for here.
Right.
Right? And you can't just walk past it and be like, oh, that feels like a Halloween movie. You got to kind of sit down and... Or it looks like an Irish castle in a swamp, right?
Right.
And you're like, wait, why is Steve Guttenberg in this castle? What's going on here?
Yeah, if you hear little snippets of dialogue, you're probably stopping, doing whatever it is, bobbing for apples or whatever you said.
Yeah, I don't know. Clearly, we host a lot of parties.
But you're stopping, you're watching the screen, you're like, what's going on here? You know, whereas like The Mummy, you kind of know what's going on.
Exactly. You're seeing, you're like, oh, there's the monster. You can easily recognize The Mummy. Like,
yeah. When he's screen. Strangling a dude right now. Okay. I know what's going on here.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I don't think High Spirits really fits that, you know, particular setting. But the real standout in these nominees, of course, is the classic... The Birds. It's just, you know, second to none, really.
Yeah.
It's a classic movie. It's near perfection. And, you know, you're seeing these birds fly. You can walk through a house, walk through somebody's Halloween party. You know what's happening. There's creepy scenes, but it's not over the top.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like it's...
We did a poll on our Instagram, and I posted these five, and The Birds did win with our followers as well.
Oh, so I'm in agreement with the masses.
Yes.
Or the masses are in agreement with me, whichever.
I like that. That works.
Yeah. I mean, The Birds is The Birds. It's just the best.
So congratulations, The Birds and Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes.
All right, our next category is most rebootable film. So what would qualify something as a most rebootable film?
Yeah, what does that mean?
Well, I wouldn't say something like The Mummy, because it's been rebooted umpteen times.
Oh, my word, yes.
And so do we really need another Mummy? Really? I don't think we do.
I submit that we do not.
For us, we define something as the most rebootable film as being, maybe we watched one of these movies and we said, it was okay, but it could have been a lot better if you had done this, this, this.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe if you had a modern budget, you'd be able to do some pretty incredible things.
Exactly.
So our options that we came up with are Q, The Winged Serpent, Tales from the Dark Side, The Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism, Diary of a Madman, and High Spirits.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk through the case for each of them.
Okay.
Starting with High Spirits, you know, again, this movie was really good and fun and enjoyable, but it's not really the classic that a lot of movies, like, it's not like a Beetlejuice.
No, I don't even know. Is it a horror comedy or just a comedy?
I think it's like a fantastical comedy. Like,
yeah.
It's not really any horror, but you have ghosts in it and stuff, so it's more
right.
Of like,
we have ghosts, so there's that.
So, yeah, I mean, I could see this with, you know, kind of modern, good comedy.
There's tons of great comedic actors out there now. Yeah. I mean, we love Steve Guttenberg, even to this day. Like, yeah. I think you stumbled upon his social media. He's just an uplifting, pleasant guy.
Yeah. Oh, we're big fans.
But I think Daryl Hannah was a little flat So I think there's probably somebody else we could plug into her role.
Yeah.
Just to kind of uplift everything and put some fresh faces in there.
Yeah. This could be one I think is a candidate for like a mini series because, you know, you have the whole struggles with him making money. You know, Peter O'Toole,
right.
Like he's trying to live up to whatever expectations his father had. And he's,
true.
And then you have this whole backstory, the ghost story. You know, yeah. Daryl Hannah's character.
Yeah, and that really was Rush, the love story between she and Gutenberg.
Yeah.
And then Gutenberg's, I guess, soon-to-be ex-wife and Daryl Hannah's ex, which
yeah.
Liam Neeson. Let's not forget Liam Neeson. We have some highbrow actors in here just before their time.
Yeah.
But yeah, those two relationships in particular were very rushed.
Yeah.
So you're right. I think maybe a series they could.
Yeah. Maybe not like three season series, but maybe like a 3-episode series.
Right.
You could tell the story. I think that would be fun. Diary of a Madman. Again, you know, you have the story of a guy who is a good, upstanding citizen in society.
Right.
He's a judge. And then he has this interaction with somebody that he's condemned to death.
Right.
And then right after that, at least in the story that what we see, it looks like this spirit of the Horla is passed on to him.
Right. So basically he's possessed at this point.
And becomes possessed and starts doing these murders and stuff. And, you know, that's something, again, that you could really develop that. Like,
right.
And, you know, the whole time you're wondering, near the end, at least, you're like, was he really just crazy? Or was that really an evil spirit that leapt from one guy to the other?
Well, and I read the short story this is based on when we were watching this movie. And I would love to see someone take the short story. And I know this is a drum I'm banging all the time. Like, it wasn't anything like the book. it really did take some departures from the book that I think the book was more interesting. It really was creepier and left you with that sense of like, was this guy crazy? Or is the Horla a real thing? Was he really possessed and that made him do these things? Or was he just going mad?
I mean,
and that plays into the whole Diary of a Madman name. So
right.
I think if we had a skillful writer to bring it back closer to the story that's in the book.
Right.
I think it could be a really good, really good adaptation.
And then still too, they rush through his whole backstory with his wife that was deceased.
That's right. He had a deceased wife and a deceased child, and there, you know, there's clearly some anguish there, but there's just not time in the movie to explore all of that and to understand, did that make him susceptible to, you know, and that was an additional twist that the book doesn't have either. I say book, it's really a short story.
Right. The For Torture sure. Chamber of Dr. Sadism is another one where they kind of throw everything at it.
Yes.
It's a vampire story. zombie story. It's a mad scientist story.
Exactly.
There's this whole forest with like body parts and stuff.
Yeah, hanging from trees.
So there's like some ghostly elements. So there's a lot of creepy things that are happening in this. You know, Christopher Lee is only in the movie for just a little small segment. And he's Dr. Sadism, right? He's at the beginning and he's at the end.
And that's it.
That's it. So we could have used some more character development, I think.
And some focus. Again, like you said, like there's just too many. They threw all of the horror gothic elements at the one movie.
Yeah. Tales from the Dark Side from the 90s. That was a anthology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we really enjoyed the Mummy story that was part of the anthology.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi.
Yeah.
Ethan Hawke, right?
No, Christian Slater.
Oh, Christian Slater, that's right.
Yeah. And then Cue the Winged Serpent. Again, it was very ambitious. You know, of course you have the Winged Serpent, a monster movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's flying around and like devouring people. But then, you know, they have this whole subplot of these worshipers of Cue.
Right.
And I forget what Q is short for.
Quetzalcoatl? It's, you know, like an ancient Mexican word.
Yeah.
Is it Aztec, I think?
Aztec.
Yeah.
So you have this Aztec religion, and people are doing human sacrifices willingly.
Right.
And then you also have, like, this cop story. You know, you have kind of this cop buddy type thing that's going on. It's a pretty good movie. Like, I enjoyed it. But it could have been more.
Yeah.
I think this is one that probably would benefit. Obviously, the special effects. It would help with a decent budget.
Yes. This one could really be helped by budget. Well, okay. And when you first added this one to the list, I was like, meh, I don't know. Like, I get tired of seeing monster movies and superhero movies where, like, whole cities are being terrorized and destroyed, yeah. You know, like, blah, blah. But you mentioned the whole Aztec worship thing, and that's what wakes up Q, the winged serpent.
Yeah.
And that made me think, well, what if we took it a different route and it was set more of, like, a Victorian era, you know, because I love like Ripper Street type stuff, Jack the Ripper, you know. Right. So then we've got the whole, like, why are these people sacrificing themselves? But take it more of a Sherlock Holmes Victorian murder mystery.
Yeah.
You could go that whole route, and I think it could be very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the whole idea of a monster, too, like coming out in broad daylight and killing people would work better in, like, kind of the older era. Because in more modern era, I think we're just so...
Yeah.
Like, we'll just fly some jets over there and shoot the thing down. Yeah,
we'll blow the thing out of the sky.
You know, and I think...
Nothing's getting in the New York airspace since 9/11 anyhow.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, yeah, I think an older timeline would work for Cue the Winged Serpent. And with all this different subplots they have going, again, I think this would be a good candidate for a miniseries.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's a lot going on there.
And so our winner of the most rebootable film is Cue the Winged Serpent.
There you go. All right, so let's talk about our heroes. Most powerful heroes is what you have titled this category, yes. Which I think might need some defining. Because if you were to take our nominees and put them in a fight together to see who's going to come out on top,
right.
That's one way to look at the category.
Yeah.
But that's not how you pitched it to me.
No. So I look at most powerful hero is like you're about to be under attack. Some sort of a physical attack. A group of baddies are coming for you.
Coming for me.
And you can only select one of these good guys to help you in the battle.
All right. And so my options, my nominees are the Swamp Thing, the Beastmaster, Leeloo from Fifth Element, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, or Captain Blackbeard from Blackbeard's Ghost.
Yes.
That's where I landed with my options for heroes.
Right.
So
let's walk through them.
All right. So Swamp Thing, obviously he's very strong. Like he's, I don't know, crushing people's skulls.
Yeah. Like he threw a car up in the air. Something.
Yeah. Like up in a tree.
Hits a boat that was coming at him. Remember, like deflected a boat, made
it. He's crazy strong. Yeah. And he can like sort of regenerate if he gets injured. He's like part plant now.
Yeah.
Or part swamp sludge.
He just needs some sunshine.
Yeah. So if he gets some sunshine, he can.
Do your battle outside.
Yeah, exactly. So you got to be fighting baddies outside for the Swamp Thing. And do I need to be near a swamp to have access to the Swamp Thing is my question.
That's a good question.
So I have questions, as always. Then we got the Beastmaster. So he's a buff guy, right? Strong, good with a sword. And I think he has a sword or something he uses, right? Sword. And then he has all of his animal friends.
Right.
But he's again, where am I being
attacked? He's got
a black tiger. You got a black tiger that's poorly painted. Yes. Yeah. And that eagle hawk thing.
Right.
That can see things for him. That's
and
helpful.
And he's got his little otters or whatever they are.
Oh, yeah.
Badgers, otters.
No, not ferrets. Ferrets. I think they're ferrets. They're all, their names were like Og and Pog or I don't know, something dumb and rhyming.
Poodle and Poodle or something.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Now, the Beastmaster would be interesting if he could call on those dudes that like grab you with their wings and they like devour you.
Oh, yeah, his little like bat people.
Yeah, and they're like,
that he made friends with.
And they open their arms and all your bones and clothes and stuff just fall on the ground.
They're like cannibal. I don't know. I guess they're not cannibals if they're not eating other bat people. They're only cannibals.
They're carnivorous for sure.
They're carnivorous, yes. They eat humans. all right, so we got Swamp Thing, Beastmaster, Leeloo, because she's like crazy smart.
Yeah.
So I think if I'm in like hackers are coming for me or financial fraudsters or something, Leeloo's my gal, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. She's like super brainiac. She can memorize materials. Yeah.
She learned like everything she knows in a day of
like all of Earth.
Watching TV and computers or something.
Yeah. Reading through a database or an internet search or something. Like she knows everything on Earth basically. So, and she's strong too.
Yeah.
And self-sacrificial. That's an admirable quality in a hero.
Right. Yep.
Then we got Buffy. She's really good in the acrobatics department and throwing stakes if you need.
Yes.
You know, if you've got vampires attacking you, she's particularly useful.
Oh, yeah.
And that's
situation. She caught like a knife in midair when they threw it at her.
Yeah.
Her
so
head.
As long as she's willing to jump in front of me to catch said knife, that would be useful to me.
Yes.
And then Captain Blackbeard, he's a bit of a drunkard and seems kind of dopey. But the one thing I really think he's got working for him.
Yeah.
Invisibility. He's a ghost.
Oh, yeah.
And so I guess if I'm in, what's his name? Dean Jones?
Yep.
If I'm in Dean Jones' shoes, like I'm the only one that can see Blackbeard.
Right.
Right. So I know where he is, but nobody else does.
Right. So here's, we saw him take out all of Silky Seymour's gangsters.
Exactly. He's good against gangsters. I feel like that's more of a modern day issue. Like can gangster like people.
Not bullets would go right through him and they can't see him anyway.
They can't see him. So they can't shoot at him. They can't throw knives at him. And he's already dead. So it doesn't matter if they do shoot bullets at him or throw knives at him. I feel like he's my best bet.
All right. That's your winner.
I'm going. Sorry. Drum roll. And the winner is Captain Blackbeard from Blackbeard's Ghost. He is my most powerful hero.
Yes.
I don't know how. Actually, I think he'd do pretty good in a fight against these other folks because they can't see him.
Yeah. Yeah. He'd be a tough foe. Yeah. Just for reference, last year, our most powerful hero was Spock.
I don't know how he'd do against Spock. I think he would infuriate Spock, which is kind of hilarious. All right, so if we have powerful heroes, we have to have evil baddies.
Most evil baddie.
Most evil baddie. So we have, the nominees are the Poltergeist, which is literally like the, what it is, the Poltergeist.
Yeah, this faction of ghosts.
Yeah, that have ticked off ghosts.
They're ticked off. They've had houses built on their graves, and they're not happy about it.
They are not happy about it. We've got Mayax from The Beastmaster.
Oh, yeah.
Played by Rip Torn.
Mm-hmm.
We have Arcane, who's like super rich baddie from Swamp Thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Horla, which is kind of the demon possession thing that gets a hold of, what's his
Vincent
face?
Vincent Price.
Thank you. Vincent Price in Diary of a Madman. And then Zorg from The Fifth Element, which is played by Gary Oldman.
Gary Oldman.
Yes. All right, so my issue with Zorg, let's talk about Fifth Element first.
Okay.
He's not really the head baddie.
Yeah.
So he's evil in, like, he wants bad things to happen and he wants to have control, but he's doing the bidding of this other super race.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So I feel like you lose some baddie credit because it's not your plan.
Yeah.
You're working for somebody else.
Yeah. He's got some likability to him.
He does. There are some places in Fifth Element where you feel, what's the word I'm looking for? Some empathy for him, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really do anything too awful that you just hate his guts. Like, oof,
that's
I hate
true.
That guy.
That's true.
But he is trying to bring about the destruction of mankind.
That's a problem.
That's pretty bad.
That makes you pretty evil.
So that gets you on the list, but maybe doesn't get you the number one. You know,
yeah,
number one.
Yeah. And then we've got the Horla from Diary of a Madman.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I have the short story in my head, so it kind of messes with me here. Is the Horla a real thing, or is the guy just going crazy? I don't know. And if it is a real thing, then it's like demon possession, I think, is what it is. So that's pretty evil.
Right, yeah. I mean, the demon is like basically pushing this guy to kill, even if he doesn't want to. It's like
and there's no purpose to it. It's senseless. It's just, what is that, chaotic evil, if you're talking role-playing games?
Right.
It's just evil to be evil.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. All right, we have Arcane from Swamp Thing. He's like super rich, but he's like way out in the swamp being awful to his henchmen, and he turned a henchman into, a pig or something?
Yeah, a little pig guy. He has kind of weird parties with evil friends.
Yeah, he definitely has some sketch parties.
Then he takes this potion, hoping to become like a superhuman.
Yeah.
Turns into some sort of weird big dog creature with a sword. Remember that?
Oh, I forgot all about that.
It did not go well.
He's kind of a laughable baddie. Like, he had a lot of money and a lot of power in his circles, I guess. But
yeah. Very disappointing use of your money.
Exactly. We have Mayax from Beastmaster. He's burning cities and villages. He's sacrificing children, just pitching them into, I don't know, some sort of fire pit.
Yes.
He's got
some evil witches kind of dancing around naked around him and stuff.
Oh, yeah. He's got evil witches doing his bidding, stealing babies and sticking them in cows.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean.
Then there's these guys that he's like turning into, you know, his evil minions.
He's like basically...
with those big spiky arms and they, those big spiky helmets he's putting on them.
It's almost like he zombifies them and then makes them his little army or something.
He's pretty evil.
He's pretty evil. I don't know about Mayax. And then we have the poltergeist, and I kind of feel like they have a reason to be ticked off, right? Their graves have been desecrated. Houses, some greedy builder has built, you know, massive subdivision on top of their graves without any... You know, thought to moving the bodies, moving the grave sites.
Yeah.
Nothing. So
I think it's hard to pick the poltergeist because they have a revenge factor.
Right. Exactly. Like they're not being evil for the sake of being evil. Like there's a point. Yeah. They they're stealing people's kids out of their bedrooms. That's pretty terrible.
Right.
But at least they're like, I don't know, there's a purpose.
Yeah.
You're like, okay.
It's understandable evil.
It. Yeah. I think the most evil baddie for me is Mayax from the Beastmaster.
Yeah. That image of him holding the kid up.
Yeah.
And he's throwing the kid in the fire.
He's just sacrificing children and I mean, he laughs about it. Like, ah, ha, ha, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm spoken as a true parent. I gotta be against that guy for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he's my most evil baddie. Evil baddie. I don't like him.
So, last year, our most evil baddie was T-Bird and gang from the movie The Crow.
Oh, yeah. They were... Yeah. Mayax and T-Bird and the gang need to go hang out together.
Yeah, they would hang out, right? All right. So, two categories left, folks. We are now down to our best leading actor. So, this is more of a traditional category.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, our winner was Gene Wilder for his portrayal of... Dr. Frankenstein from Young Frankenstein.
Yes, he was fabulous.
All right, our nominees include Peter Cushing as John Banning from the movie The Mummy.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Bacon as Val from Tremors. Donald Sutherland as Matthew Bunnell in Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Kurt Russell as MacReady from The Thing. Peter O'Toole as Peter Plunkett in High Spirits.
Yeah.
So let's go through this. I look at Peter Cushing, and again, he's a very thin, kind of emaciated looking guy. but I've always loved his physical action.
Yeah.
And so when this mummy is grabbing him by the throat, it's like he is fighting for his life very much. Throwing everything at it, and it's so believable. And then when he's committing violence on somebody, at first you're thinking like, what's this little dude going to do? But he makes it, he sells it.
He seems
like, this is a guy you want on your side. He's got the intelligence, the smarts, but he doesn't mind scrapping.
Right, yeah.
You have Kevin Bacon playing Val. And I think he gets props, really, because he's kind of carrying this film that very easily could turn into a B-movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, for all intents and purposes, they're kind of making a B-movie.
All sequels were definitely B-movies.
Yeah. But, you know, you're in the desert, you got giant worms killing people. It kind of sounds like a B-movie.
For sure, yeah.
But I think he, and as well as some of the other actors, they really carry this film and elevate it to the next level. So that takes us to Donald Sutherland, and his portrayal of Matthew Bunnell in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, I think is really multifaceted. So I really like the romance angle that he had with Brooke Adams' character, Elizabeth Driscoll. I felt like, you know, he's trying to put together this puzzle and figure out what's going on.
Right.
All of that was, you know, well played. And then, of course, there's a lot of physical action. You know, you're running away from bad guys and trying to fight off bad guys. So I felt like he did a pretty good job there. Kurt Russell was MacReady. You know, he's the leader trying to figure things out. Technically, he's not the leader, but he kind of rises to the challenge.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of his acting is subtle.
Right.
He does it quietly. He does it with facial expressions.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think less is more. And that's really what makes him so good in this movie.
Yeah.
And then Peter O'Toole, you know, he's classic, fantastic actor.
Yes.
I thought he added some great levity to kind of a dark character, you know, a character that's wanting to commit suicide, right?
And yeah, that's true.
Struggling with daddy issues and all of this, while being funny and charming.
Right. Yes.
And all of these employees are doing work for him.
Right.
You know, they're doing all these crazy hijinks in order to help him succeed.
Yeah.
He makes that believable.
He does. And he adds, I don't know, he has the strongest acting chops in that movie. It's kind of like Kevin Bacon and Tremor, you know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Peter O'Toole and Kevin Bacon may not have been on the same level in those separate movies. but he definitely raises the game of everybody else around him.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, it came down to Peter O'Toole versus Kurt Russell.
Mm.
And we did put this up for a vote on our Instagram. And we are in agreement with you, Instagram. The winner is Kurt Russell.
Yay, Kurt Russell. Are we going to have to rebrand our podcast as the Kurt Russell Fan Club?
Yeah, it might have to be.
All right. So last but certainly not least, we have our best leading actress. And our five nominees are Jo Beth Williams as Diane Freeling in Poltergeist, Tippi Hedren as Melanie Daniels in The Birds, Mila Jovovich as Lilu in The Fifth Element, Brooke Adams as Elizabeth Driscoll in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and Christy Swanson as Buffy in Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
All right.
All right, so let's talk about these ladies. Okay. So you've talked a lot about Jo Beth Williams already. She's kind of that girl next door kind of mom. She's still mm-hmm. cute and young and down to earth, but the fun mom in not a ironic or silly kind of way. Like she just seems like a very earthy mom, you know? And then, of course, we have Tippi Hedren, which, I mean, hello, she's a classic, right?
Yep.
She's just strikingly beautiful. And she is the face of The Birds now. Like, I can't tell you every Halloween I've existed and been old enough to know who Tippi Hedren was.
Uh-huh.
I have seen someone in this amazing The Birds costume, right? Like
a power suit.
Yeah, the classic clean cut suit, the black pumps, and then that updo, that blonde updo, you know, of course in the Halloween costume, it's usually a wig. And then they have, you know, crows glued to their suit or something, but she's so recognizable as this character. And she does a really good job of just being a little bit spooky herself.
Yeah.
That's something about all of the characters in The Birds is they have a little bit of this aloof spookiness about them.
Yeah.
And just adds to the whole. But she is like the queen of that.
Right.
In The Birds.
And I think to her romantic interplay with, what's his name?
Rod Taylor.
With Rod Taylor. You know, they're not just openly flirting.
No, like, there's very coy or sly.
Yeah, the scenes are real, again, subtle. Mm-hmm. I think we like the subtlety. It's not just like, hey, I'm flirting with you.
Right.
You know, look at me. And in a lot of those scenes, they go from like playful, like I want to be with you, to like I'm offended with what you're saying.
Right.
Like, you've crossed some line and I'm upset with you. So there's a lot of that that goes back and forth.
It keeps, I think, the viewer very unsettled.
Yes. Yes.
And that adds again to that spooky factor
right.
of the movie. So then we have Mila Jovovich as Lilu in The Fifth Element.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she's playing an unearthly character. Like she's, is she an alien? I'm not really, like a heavenly being sort of thing.
Yeah. She's trying to play somebody that's like good in every way possible.
Right. Exactly. And she nails it. Like she's very, I don't want to say ethereal. I don't think that's otherworldly, I guess.
Yeah.
That's her like assimilation of information about humans and the earth. And it's just all, she seems like someone who was dropped here from somewhere other than Earth.
Yeah.
And she does a good job. I mean, it's believable.
Yeah.
We have Brooke Adams as Elizabeth Driscoll from Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Also very convincing. Like she is the first person to kind of notice, at least the first person in her circle to be like, hey, things aren't right here.
Mm-hmm.
And she does a really good job of convincing us like, she's figuring something out and no one else is believing her and that's freaking her out, you know?
Right.
So Yeah, I say she's right up there with these other ladies. Very yep. convincing lead role. And Christy Swanson as Buffy. I mean, she's cute. She's athletic. I think she's built for the role. We've talked about this in the past. Like, a lot of times you'll get, like, superhero chick, and she's 5'2", weighs 95 pounds, and you're like, okay, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but Christy Swanson, I mean, I have no idea how tall she is, but she looks athletic.
Yeah.
So I can get it. Like, if you're going to, like, find a teenage girl to fight vampires.
Right.
This girl probably could do that, you know? Yeah,
very believable from the physical aspects. And she kind of has a story arc, you know, kind of a dumb teenager in the beginning. Right. And you realize a lot of it is just her trying to fit in because she's not that dumb.
No, yeah, she's really not that dumb, but she's going through the whole Valley Girl ridiculousness, which was hilarious when I was a teenager. We thought that was very funny. Yeah, so of these leading ladies, I think the award goes to Tippi Hedren.
It's funny, last year the leading actress winner was Kim Novak in Vertigo.
Oh, hey. Well, I have a thing for Hitchcock. So. Yeah. Again, those classy. And, I think there's probably, we've talked about this in the past, probably last season. And maybe even this season when we talked about the birds. Hitchcock was not maybe kind to women.
Right.
And forced them to act a certain way, put them in certain clothes to get a certain sort of acting from them. But it worked.
Yeah.
Whether or not it was good or okay or appropriate, it definitely worked because he pulls these performances from these women that are, I mean, I've already used
next
this term.
Next level, right?
Yeah, next level. That's, yes, exactly.
Yeah. So congratulations, Tippi Hedren. You earned it despite all of the lashes Hitchcock may have given you behind the scenes.
Yeah, who knows?
You earned this attackie.
Woo! Good job, everyone.
All right, so that does it for us. Again, we're going to be taking a bit of a break. If you have ideas for movies you'd like us to review, please hit us up on the socials.
That's right. We'll still be around.
And we will see you next time.
Yeah, enjoy your movie watching, guys.
All right, take care.
Peace out.
Peace out.